Hi, I'm Jasmine Cephas Jones.
Hi, I'm Felicia Boswell.
Hi, I'm Nick Rashad Burrows.
Hey, I'm Cody Renard Richard, and you're listening to the Call and Response Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Call and Response Podcast with Felicia Fitzpatrick. And y'all, I have to be honest, one of the shows my roommates and I are obsessed with right now is The Masked Singer. We got into it last season where we immediately knew Wayne Brady was the Fox, and the next thing we know we're talking about, well, so-and-so has this intonation, so that can't be them, and so-and-so was on Broadway, so that clue package did make sense, and screaming for them to take it off, right along with Nick Cannon and the TV audience when it was time to reveal who it was. All of this to say, this season's Miss Monster was revealed last week, and I won't say who in case of spoilers, but one of the guesses was Dionne Warwick. And that got me thinking, who is Dionne Warwick? What's she up to? Does she still not know the way to San Jose? And sure enough, she is getting ready for a concert at the Beacon Theater on March 22nd in New York City. And how do I know? Because Gold Star recommended it to me as an event to check out. How do they literally always know? But of course, that is just the beginning with Gold Star, because they offer affordable tickets to theater, concerts, comedy shows, and so much more. So download Gold Star, and let's make some memories, y'all. And I know, every week I'm like, I'm so hype, I'm so thrilled, I'm so excited. I am thinking about making t-shirts for real, because it is a catchphrase, because there are so many amazing artists, amazing people out here working in the theater scene. And I feel so grateful to talk to them. And today's guest is no exception. I'm so excited to chat with him because, like, y'all, he's, like, so cool, so popular. He's, like, an Instagram influencer. And I'm just, like, honored to be sitting in the same room as him. But for real, like, on a serious note, I feel like I've been observing his career for a while. And I'm really excited to dive into it because, as we all know, diversity, representation, inclusion is something we talk about on the stage, but not really behind the scenes. Or we're starting to talk about it beyond the wings. And Cody Renard Richard is, like, doing the damn thing. So he's worked on After Midnight, Motown, Kinky Boots, Paramore, Hamilton, Freestyle Love Supreme, The Wiz Live, Hairspray Live, the Tony Awards. Like, the list goes on and on, which I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, yes, I'm so excited. So we're going to get into it today. And that was your extra ass intro.
I love it. Thank you.
No, but I mean, like, for real, I think it's so exciting. One, because I feel like stage managers, at least I might have this perception of, like, being these, like, quiet, like, I don't know, even introverted people. But, like, you have this extroverted, exciting personality that I feel like would be able to unite a group of people in a really exciting way. And you're just like, you're just killing it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh my God, thank you.
Sorry, really, this is just an hour of me gushing over you. Surprise. He's like, what have I got myself into? No, let's start easy. Let's warm up. The first question of the podcast being, how did you get involved in performing arts?
I started in high school. I'm not gonna say troubled kid, but I was a troublemaker. I talked back in school. I was always in detention.
Uh-oh.
I almost got sent to, like, in school suspension, which is, like, you know, alternative school, because
uh-huh.
I was always a clown. And in doing that, they were like, you have to pick up an extracurricular activity to, like, ease your mind or whatever. And I was like, okay, sure. So then I joined what they call the drama club, you know, in high school. And when I got there, the teacher looked at me and she was like, you can't be cutting up in here. And I was like, oh, she said, if you start, you act like that, you won't be in here. And I was like, well, who cares? You know, me being sassy back. And then, like, over the weeks and then turned into months, I was like, oh, I actually love it here. And I wanted to be better so I can be accepted in her world.
Wow.
And then and in that, like, I found a family and I kind of just fell in love with theater, and that kind of started my journey.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that. So talk us through some, like, when you were like, you know what, I'm committing to this, like, you're from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing you're a part of UIL.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very that. It was I was so competitive. And that was another thing that I loved, because, you know, I ran track, but not a lot. I did it, and then I was like, this ain't for me. And then I was on the rodeo team because I grew up on a ranch.
Of course.
So, like, I was involved in sport, Texas sports.
Mm-hmm.
But it was competing in theater that was so fun.
Mm.
Oh, I loved it. I mean, it's, you know, an award. Like, I loved it. So the UIL thing was great, and you know, it was special, and
Yeah.
And you got to, like, you know, meet these people and kind of, like, form bonds with other schools and doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
So then how did you discover stage management in all of this?
I started off as an actor. I mean, I say that, but I acted in, like, one show in high school. And I learned very early on that it wasn't what I wanted to do, because I would stand on stage and I'm like, I just felt weird. And I would look around and I'm like, why are y'all standing here? Like, you know what I mean? Like, huh. I was interested. I don't know. I just couldn't be in the moment. Like, it was not. I didn't like that. Like, I liked, yeah, it just wasn't for me. So then my theater teacher one day, I was doing another show or getting ready to do another show, and she was like, you should look into being a stage manager. And I was like, why? I didn't know what it meant. But she's like, you have a way of making people listen without yelling.
Ooh.
And I was like, okay, whatever. But in my mind, all I heard was, I get to be in charge. So I was like, great, sign me up.
Yes,
you know, and in
yes.
high school, that's what it's about. It's like, you know, being, you know, either popular or in charge or whatever. And in that moment, I was like, oh, I get to, like, be her right-hand man.
Right.
Great. I'm important, you know.
Right.
And essentially, in high school, you're kind of the assistant director. Like, you and you're the stage manager and you're the props person. And, you know, you do all of it. Because it's not really a structured thing for stage managers.
Right.
Maybe in bigger high schools, but in mine, it was very much like, I did it all, which I loved. I love, like, being the person that people come to and be like, Cody, can I get this? I'm like, yes.
Yeah, like, you problem know? Solver Cody.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you an oldest child?
I'm an only child.
Oh, me too.
Yes.
Hey, come on. But see, that's the, like, I was going to say oldest children tend to be bossy. Sorry, Mom, if you're listening. But I feel like even only children, like, you're responsible, you're independent, you know how to take
yeah,
care of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're able to do that with other people. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
So this was the same teacher who was like, if you act up, you're out.
Oh, yeah.
So she knew.
Oh, she knew. So I don't know. And she, like, I mean, and to say she saved me is such a weird thing to say, like, to put that on someone. But I think I look back and I'm like, she saw something in me that I'm sure, like, my mom saw and, like, my family saw. And but they can only do so much because, you know, when you're in school, you're away from them.
Yeah.
She was one of the first people who believed in me at such a young age. And I look back on it, and it means so much now. But then, you know, you don't really think about that because that's not what you're thinking about at, you know, 15,
yeah.
14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then thinking about theater as a community and all of this stuff and, like, you know, a place of acceptance and, like, was it an open space like that?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
And, I wasn't searching for, like, a space that I needed to feel free because I was popular in high school.
I'm not surprised.
I was. I was homecoming king.
Yes, you were.
So I had a good time in high school, but it was the theater when I joined them and, like, just meeting people who were different but so much like me. It just felt free and like a family, and we all just really bonded.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So then, well, in going to college, did you immediately pursue stage management right away?
I did. I kept doing it in high school, and then I started looking at schools. I knew the only thing that I knew that I wanted to do was get out of Texas. I love Texas, but I just felt that I needed to experience life somewhere else.
Sure.
So I went to, like, the thespian festivals and met with these schools, and a guy named Peter Sargent, who just recently passed, recruited me to go to Webster Conservatory, and they had they were offering a BFA in stage management, and I was like, I'd do that in high school, and then he accepted me, and then that's kind of how I continued to learn more about it.
Very cool. So then, like, at a very basic level, how would you define production stage management for Broadway?
A very basic level. I would say the PSM of a Broadway show is like the mission control station. It's the place where the communication flows freely to every department, and it's also the place where people come to check in to make sure things are working and running properly.
That was a beautiful definition.
Oh, thanks.
I love that. Because I think, too, I know I've had confusion of, like, stage manager, or like you said, PSM being production stage manager, versus, like, company manager and general manager. So what would you say the differences are between those groupings?
The general manager primarily oversees the overall show and looks at the budget and personnel and contracts and like more logistical things.
Like HR kind
of. Well, company management is more of an HR.
Dang,
so, like,
okay.
I mean, like, the lines are kind of blurred through all of them. Like,
yeah.
The company manager and the stage manager works very closely together because they're at the theater every day.
Mm-hmm.
And they deal with a lot of, like, HR things. And they also deal with, like, the day-to-day budget and paychecks with the cast and, like, the cast and stage management, like, contracts and stuff like that. And, like, and they deal with a whole lot more, but that's, like, in a very general sense of
what they oversee.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, y'all, I mean, I love that you said that the communication, like, flows through, like, your mission control. I love that. But, like, I mean, y'all, there's so many, like, details of that because you're calling the show, you're pre-setting the show, you're working with, like, the crews.
Yeah.
That sounds overwhelming as hell to me.
But that's one of the things that I really love about stage managing is that, you know, and also just a manager in general when you're in the theater is that you get to work with every department.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know. Excuse me. I'm like, you know, that's one of the few jobs that you get to, like, touch base with everyone and you have a say and, like, not a say, but you have a hand in what everyone does. So, like, you have, and an understanding of what they do. And I love that about the job.
Yeah. Because you get to, like, multitask.
Yes, exactly.
Woo, y'all. Gotta be a multitasker.
You do.
So then what would you say, like, between all of the things you learned in high school and then studying it in college and now your own, like, professional experience, what would you say the skills are that someone needs to be a successful stage manager?
I think, you know, it's when you look at a younger person and you see that they are driven and organized and have a sense of leadership, I think those are all good qualities to start with. Mm-hmm. And then you can hone in on, like, communication skills and all the other things that comes with it. But yeah. I think those are, like, the things that people look at. I just recently started teaching at Fordham for the semester. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting watching younger stage managers approach the craft because it's changed. But, you know, and me still being a young stage manager in my career too, like, you know, shaping young minds, it's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I look for, like, people who have those skills that are built in, and you can always, you know, sharpen them and, like, add on to it. But, like, I think if you start with that, you'll probably go far.
And then when you were, like, in high school and in the beginning of college, like, I mean, did you know, like, I didn't know that there were professional, like, journalists and social media people for Broadway. Did you know that was a thing for Broadway?
No, I didn't when I first started in college. And then I came to New York City fall break of my sophomore year.
Okay.
And I saw Avenue Q as the first show I saw in New York on Broadway. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. And I was looking through the playbill and I saw the stage managers in the playbill. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do. My name is going to be in one of these playbills one day. And from that moment on, I was like, I'm going to work on Broadway. I had no idea how, but I'm like, I will be working on Broadway one day. And then every time spring break, fall break of every year, of every semester since my sophomore year, I came to New York because I was infatuated with the city.
Yeah.
And I came here every break and I saw a lot of shows. I would be here for 7 days and I would see like 10 shows. Like,
oh,
I would
goodness.
Like pack them in.
Hit every like
yes,
time you could see a
show. Absolutely. A matinee, an evening before, I would pack them in.
That is
amazing. Was obsessed. I was really obsessed.
Yes. Yeah. So then is there a myth or like a misconception about stage management that we could bust here on the podcast tonight?
Ooh, interesting. No one's ever asked me that.
Okay.
It's true. No one's ever asked me that.
Oh my God, honored.
Let's see. I mean, maybe like, you know, I think a lot of people look at stage managers as like, you know, someone who hides in the back wearing black, mm-hmm. like carrying a multi-tool on their belt and like
and a headset.
A headset and always like a flashlight at the ready.
Right.
Which, yes, we often have a flashlight at the ready, and we often, I usually don't, but there are a lot of people who do carry multi-tools around. But I think that like in a sense, like stage managers are multifaceted people with personalities and like, and you know, and we're very creative. We're not just technical and like, you know, the hammer. Like we're very open to the creative process as well.
Yeah.
We're collaborators in a sense, and I don't think we talk about that because like you think of it as a very technical job, which it is a very technical job. Like we have to know a lot about technical theater and the way the show functions and all the design elements and stuff like that. But also we have to collaborate with the cast and the director, and they speak a very, you know, a more fluid language than some of the technical theater professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's something that like we don't normally talk about, but yeah.
No, I love
We're
that.
We're creatives too.
You are. And I, like even someone who's in the industry, like I definitely have had those thoughts before too of like, oh yeah, like you just described with the headset and all black and stuff. But that's why I love that you're using your platform the way that you are to like shine a light, pull back the curtain. God, these like cliches, but you know, on what it's like to be a stage manager, because it is one of those roles that does not get as much attention as, like, you know, the actors or the creative, like the directors and stuff. But it's something that so many people might have the skills to do and love theater.
And also, like, a lot of people get into stage manager because they don't want the spotlight. You know what I mean? Because the spotlight is rarely on us. And I don't think the spotlight needs to be on us, because it's not about, I say that, but there's this whole initiative going around about visibility, stage manager visibility, which I think is important. But what I mean by the spotlight is, like, we're not standing center stage being like, it's on me. Like, we don't beg for applause when a scenic change goes right. You know what I mean? Like, we do that because that is what services the show, and like, and we want to see everything run seamlessly and smoothly. But I do think visibility is important. I do think people should know who's stage managing a show. If they know who's designing the show, I think they should know who's, like, who's helping run this thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. I do think that, like, you know, when they interview a director for stuff, like, you know, the stage manager might have a very different perspective about what's going on.
Right.
And, like, some people aren't comfortable talking, and that's okay, but then some are. So I just think that, you know, that visibility and being approached about certain things is important as well.
Yeah.
You know?
And not to group all stage managers.
No, of course not. Of course not.
So then, in terms of thinking about, like, a show and the process of a show, how does the role of a stage manager change from, like, rehearsals to tech, and then when a show is running, how does that, like, walk us through that?
It depends on the show, but primarily in rehearsals, our main focus is, well, we have a few, but is to A, support the director and make sure that they feel supported and they have everything that they need. B, to support the cast and make sure that they feel supported and that they have everything that they need. And then for us to kind of just work with the director to either put up the show or learn the show. So when we transition into tech, someone has all the information of what needs to happen. So we're tracking props and we're tracking scenic changes and we're writing down the blocking. So we are the first stop when people are like, well, what happens here? Or like, what goes there? So we're tracking all of that in rehearsals. So once we get onto the stage, it's a seamless transition. So we can teach the crew what we've been spending, you know, multiple weeks doing in the rehearsal hall.
I don't, like, I just admire stage managers so much. I'm, like, overwhelmed just thinking about what you just said. Like, getting that script, you know, the first day, or like, and just thinking, okay, we're about to, like, build a show and I'm responsible
but
for
that's
all
so cool though, because you get the script on the first day and it's essentially blank pages. I mean, there's text on the pages,
right?
And like, the director, everyone's been doing pre-pro and you know, they've been working on what they want, but essentially it's a blank, you know, it's a blank canvas that we kind of build together, which is really cool. You know, I love seeing a show all the way through, because you get to, especially when you do readings and workshops and you finally go into production, is you can kind of see the dream fully realized. Like, that's so it's so fun.
Do you have a favorite part of the process if you had to choose a part?
For me, it's definitely technical rehearsals. Love it. I love it. Like, the first day going into the theater, like, everything leading up to it, like, when you have the sits probe, when you're with the orchestra for the first time, going to the theater and showing the cast of theater for the first time, and then just adding in the crew and all the technical elements and just seeing how it all comes together. I love that.
I love it for you. I'm, like, so happy that you're happy. So what was that first year, like, when you transitioned from college to New York City, what was that first year like for you?
It was crazy, because I went to school in St. Louis, and they don't teach you how to get a job in New York City, just because it's not the world that they live in. And it's a different world. New York is a very different world than anywhere else, you know. And so just trying to figure out how to work here, knowing that I had a goal of what I wanted to do, but also, like, I had to live, I had to eat, I had to, like, you know what I mean, find a place to stay, you know. So just, like, figuring out the logistical thing, survival, while also trying to work as a stage manager. And I had a few connections, because I worked with people in St. Louis, and some of my classmates have moved here. So we all kind of moved here together. So I had a few connections, but we're all, you know, we didn't really know how to utilize each other or, like, utilize those connections.
Sure.
Yeah.
So then what was the first Broadway show you worked on?
The first Broadway show I worked on was a show called This Is Strata Jones.
And you were
I was the production assistant.
So what was that role like for you?
It was, you know, it was actually a dream, because I had did the show off Broadway, and when the show announced that it was moving to Broadway, they essentially replaced the stage managers and brought in Broadway stage managers, which happens frequently just because it's a different scale. You know, there's union house rules. There are a whole bunch of new elements that are added when you do a Broadway show and just the politics of it. And just, you know, it's just a different beast. Yeah. So a lot of times they bring in more experienced stage managers who are familiar with the territory. And me being 21, 22, I didn't understand. Right. You know, I PA'd it off Broadway and I was like, the cast is going. Why aren't we going?
Yeah.
So I was a little bit kind of shell shocked. And then, and I wrote to the stage manager who was doing the show downtown with me. And I was like, hey, when do we start rehearsals? This is so exciting. Blah, blah. And she was like, oh,
honey,
poor Cody, we're not going. So I was like, and this is something that, that kind of shocked me when I look back, because I'm like, she said that to me, and instead of me being sad, I'm like, dang, I wish we were doing that. I was like, oh, I'm going to find a way to do this show. Because I felt like that was my moment. Yeah. I was like, this is what I've been dreaming of. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is, it's being dangled in front of me. How do I rise through the occasion to make this happen?
Right.
So I did something that I probably wouldn't do now, because it's not, I mean, I would because I have the connections now, but it was very ballsy. I emailed the director, Dan Konecdis. I emailed the associate choreographer, Jessica Hartman. I emailed Patty Murin, the lead of the show. And I was like, you know, I feel like I have a good relationship with all of you. I love the show. I know the show. I would be honored to move on if you can pass on my resume or whatever to whoever. I would love to just meet with them and see if this is a possibility. And they all wrote back very, very positive things. And then within the week, I had an interview with the PSM of the show.
Uh-oh.
And then she ended up, you know, after a couple of weeks, she ended up bringing me onto the show. And only because I reached out. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't thinking about me not coming. And it's no fault to them or whatever.
Right.
It's just, you have to advocate for yourself. And
yes.
I was like, I have to figure out how to do this. So I just wrote to them. And they could have all said no or like, kid, move on. You know what I mean?
Right.
And just because I reached out, someone said yes. And that's how the door opened for me.
I love that. That
yeah.
is some gumption.
Yeah.
Children, listen today. Listen to your Uncle Cody. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
That's very, very cool. And
so even like being a PA and doing that, it was so rewarding and such a dream because
right.
A, it was my first time working on Broadway, and B, I was with these people that I loved and I loved the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of felt kismet by getting there from, like, you know, reaching out and the stars aligning and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so, I'm inspired, y'all. So then your first Broadway contract was Motown.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I just want to know, like, were you thinking back to high school, Cody, and all of this? Like, what were your feelings? You're like, okay, this is my first Broadway contract. I'm going to be ASMing on a Broadway show.
Yeah. I mean, in that moment, I don't know if I was thinking back to high school, Cody, then.
Mm-hmm.
I think at that moment, I was like, I have to nail this. I have to be good enough to where they can ask me to do something else. You know what I mean? Because for me,
no.
like, like, seriously, my entire career has been like, okay, I'm here. I need
yes.
to stay here, or I need to, you know, keep going, you know? And so I was never interested in trying to settle, just be like, so sometimes it was hard to live in the moment. Cause I was like, okay, I have to be better than the next person because it was a lot for me to get here. And I don't take that lightly in every sense of what that statement means.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So it was, I was excited. I was around a lot of people who looked like me, which was very exciting. That didn't always happen in my career.
Right.
You know? So that was special. So I just knew that I had to bring it,
right,
you know?
Right.
And I worked very hard and that propelled me to the next thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then, like, after I did a couple of shows, I had that moment of like, whoa, you're here.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You're
and then
here.
And then that was when I felt like, okay, you know, okay, I'm in this world. Like, I feel like I'm a valued member of this community.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a powerful moment.
It really was.
And like you were mentioning too, like, you know, when you're working hard on these shows, like, the people you're working with are going to notice it. And that way, it's kind of like the Patty Murin moment where you're like,
yeah,
I could write to this person and be like, hey, I feel like we've developed a good relationship. Is that how, like, in terms of booking jobs as a stage manager, is it just based on connections and people you know?
I mean, connections is a big part of it.
Okay.
But it's also timing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of my journey has been connections, but it's also, I'm very persistent. Like, you know, I reach out to people that I don't know all the time. And the worst they can do is not return the email, not return the phone call, or just tell me no. You know what I mean? I'm not afraid of a no anymore. So, like, I'll reach out. If it's a project that I feel like I'm passionate in or a project that I feel like I'm right for, I'll always reach out. And the worst thing they can do is turn me away, you know? And there are worse things that can happen than that. You know what I'm saying? So connections are a big part of it, because if you know someone, or if you know someone who knows someone, like, and you get the recommendation, like, that's definitely helpful. Yeah. So networking, getting your face out there and meeting these people is very valuable. But you can get the job through connections, but if you're not good in the room, you're not going to keep the job.
Good point.
What I mean?
Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of people come through the doors who gotten a job because of a friend, but you know, you don't see them after a couple of years just because of various reasons. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, you still have to work hard just because when you get in the room,
of
you know
course,
what I mean?
You gotta stay on your game.
But connection is a big part of it, you know?
Yeah. Well, because I know too, you obviously have worked like and had contracts with shows, but you've also been like a cover stage manager for shows.
Yeah.
Which I honestly did not realize happened. I feel like so ignorant about the stage management world, but like, how does that happen? Like you did Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah,
right?
I'm currently still the sub that we call them substitute stage managers.
Okay.
I'm currently still working at Dear Evan Hansen and Lion King, which is such a blessing, because both of those shows will be around for the next couple of years. You know,
yes.
So I've been very fortunate to like to be able to pop in there when I'm in between shows, and it's not consistent. It's like, you know, like I'm in Lion King tomorrow. I haven't been there in a couple of weeks because someone, you know, has a personal day.
Right.
So like, it just works out, you know, if I have time when I'm not on a show, so I can go back. And this also keeps it fresh and interesting too, because especially at Lion King, because the cast of people don't change that much, so you go back and it kind of feels like home.
Yeah.
Dear Evan Hansen is a little bit more of a turnover, so every time I go back, it's like I'm meeting new people.
Right. Interesting.
But yeah, that's fun.
So I feel like I already know your answer to this question, but like, are you ever scared when it's been a couple weeks and you go back to Lion King?
Yes. Not now. Well, because I started subbing at Lion King in 2015.
Okay.
And then I think it was 2015. And then from when I left, I was full time on like two or three shows, and maybe, I don't know. And I didn't have time. And then and then I had some time off, and I called them up. I was like, hey, I would love to come back. And they're like, great, can you come in this weekend? And I ain't been there in 2.5 years.
Ooh.
From then. And I was like, I do not remember this. Like, oh, you'll be fine. You'll pick it up. And I was terrified, because I was like, I'm not going to remember this track. And I got there, and then like after 15, 20 minutes, it's all sort of started coming back to me. But I had worked there enough before, so it was soaked in, so it made sense.
Yeah.
Dear Evan Hansen, I'm not there as much. So every time I go back, it's always that moment of like, do I remember this?
Right.
And then it starts, and you're like, oh, okay. You know.
So then are you calling these shows?
No, not those two, because I'm not there enough to call them. Because I think I would have to be there a little bit more frequently to call those two, especially Lion King.
Because I was going to say, there's a lot of elements in that show.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know? So then looking at all the shows you've worked on, which we'll get to the live TV stuff in a second, but between the live TV, the Broadway, or, you know, any other stage shows, which show do you feel like you've learned the most
on? That is a very hard question, because each show brings a set of different challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And I will follow up with that by saying that, like, you never stop learning. I never stop learning. I'm always actively trying to learn something new and, like, to expand my skills. That is hard. I think, you know what, because it's the freshest show on my brain. I would say Freestyle Love Supreme.
Okay.
I probably grew the most.
Yeah.
So in turn, I feel like I probably learned the most. It was also my first time PSMing on Broadway.
Right.
It was an improv show on Broadway.
Right. I want to ask
it
about
was,
that.
You know what I mean? It was all these different elements. And, you know, it was a high profile show. Lynn was in the show, Chris Jackson, James Iglehart, you know what I mean? All these people. So it had a lot of players, you know what I mean? So just learning how to sharpen my communication skills and learning, you know, Yeah, it was a lot.
Ask about that too, because like, how do you call, or like, how do you stage manage an improv show?
Well, you know, I had these conversations with my with Mackenzie Murphy, who was the assistant on the show.
Okay.
And she's incredible. I worked on the show Downtown when we were at Ars Nova at the top of the year last year. Mm-hmm. But Mackenzie just came off of Broadway,
so she
had to quickly learn what the chaos was. And there was a moment when, because the stage managers, we like to be in control, even when we're not supposed to be, we like to at least know what's happening. You know what I mean? We need to know what the structure is, that things are going to work as they're supposed to. Mm-hmm. With an improv show, you kind of have to let some of that go. And we were having this conversation, and I was looking at her, and I was like, am I trying to organize something that doesn't need to be organized? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, am I trying to add structure to an existing thing that doesn't need a structure?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we kind of worked together and with Anthony Venizelle, who's one of the creators of the show, about a way to like formalize it a little bit. So like, we were able to have some sort of control over the chaos. So when it derails, or if it derails, we know how to like manage that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So that was interesting, and that was fun being able to have those conversations and figure that out.
Yeah.
I definitely think that was probably, especially because it's so fresh, I'm still like processing and thinking about it. I mean, it was also a blast. I loved working on that show, and I love all of them.
Yes.
But it was a lot.
What's like, you just had so much joy when you said that. Like, what did you love so much about it?
I think two things. They are such a family, and I was very grateful that they welcomed me into their family, because they have been working on this show for upwards of 20 years.
Right.
You know, they've all known each other. Well, most of them have all known each other for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that was special that they like welcomed me into their family. And the other thing was, I've been working since I've started PSMing, which has been within the last 2 years. I've been working on being my authentic self in the room, or at least trying to be, because it's hard. You know, you try to figure out your management style, your leadership style, and you hope that people react to it. And this was the second time in my career that I worked on a show where I felt that I could walk into the room and just be me and not have to put on a thing.
Wow.
To get someone's respect or to get someone's attention.
Mm.
Or to, you know, to lead the room. I could lead it with being myself, and they all responded to that. And that was very special. So that was something that meant a lot to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's like, I know I was very extra with my geeking out over you earlier, but like, I really do think you have such a beautiful, like, open presence, because you're so genuinely excited about your work. And I'm glad to hear that you felt like you were able to establish that with that project. And I guess I am curious too, like, what do you do in the moments where you feel like you can't be your authentic self? Because let me geek out a little bit more, but you being a gay Black man occupying that type of space,
mm-hmm.
is a, like, just incredible. But are there times that you feel like...
Oh, 1,000. I mean, most of my career I felt that way, because I've... And, you know, I'm getting older now. But, like... But, you know, being a young gay Black man as a stage manager in New York City, there are very few of us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually meeting more now. Shout out to all of the young stage managers I've been meeting lately.
Yes.
But when I first moved here, Kenny McGee was the only other Black gay male stage manager that I knew of. And there are a few others that were around. I just had never met them. So I only knew of one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I knew of, like, you know, three of other Black women stage managers.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime I was on a team as a stage manager, I was the only person of color. Up until, I think, Motown, I worked with a woman named Amber Dickerson. That was the only other time I was on a team with another stage manager of color. And then, you know, maybe like a sprinkling of other times, but 90% of the time I was the only person of color on a team.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is a lot, especially if you're working on a show with a cast that's mainly of color.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you're not, it's just it carries a different weight. At least it did for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I always felt that I had to either fit in with the team that was already existing, or I had to sometimes silence myself in a space because I didn't think that it was made for me, you
wow.
know? So in knowing that, as I continued to work, I was like, oh, I need to get out of that headspace.
Mm-hmm.
you know. And I tell people this all the time when I meet with younger stage managers, people who are wanting to do this. I'm like, you have to lead with yourself. You're the reason why you're in the room. You know what I mean? Yeah. And people didn't tell me that. But you know, as I've been telling other people that, it's just a constant reminder for myself. Right. You know, you got to practice what you preach. Right. So that's been the journey from that. But yeah, there were times when I felt uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, people would come to me and ask me a question that was specifically about race because I was the only one in the room.
Oh,
you know what I mean? It's those things because, you know, they're like, well, you're black, you can talk about this. You know what I mean? They don't say that flat out, but it was the connotation. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. very much implied. So yeah, so that's been a journey.
So the days that happen, and like, I mean, what are the self-care practices? Like, what do you do to stay checked in with yourself?
I have amazing friends, who are very, generous with their time and very, lovely with their words. Mm-hmm. So I would call and text them, and then we would have a night and we would, you know, kind of debrief and talk about it and vent, you know, and most of my friends, who I share this with aren't stage managers, so they have a different take on it,
right.
Which I love, you know. And then like I go to the gym and like I release like that part of me by, you know, running on the treadmill and doing stuff like that. Right. So I try to be social and, you know, do healthy things with people I love to kind of take care of that.
Right. Support systems are so real in New York City.
Yes, absolutely.
Y'all. Wow. No, I mean, the work of you being in a leadership position, not just you being a stage manager, but like being in a leadership position, is like so motivating and exciting. And like, I hope that we only continue the momentum of having stage managers of color and black
Me
stage managers
too.
In spaces, you know?
Absolutely.
So also, okay, so we're like, you've done so much. I want to hear about the live TV experiences
too. Oh yeah.
You worked on The Wiz Live, mm-hmm. Hairspray Live, mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ Superstar Live.
And Jesus Christ Superstar Live. So, I mean, was it, their musicals, did it feel the same as Broadway, or was it completely different?
Each one felt a little bit more different.
Really?
Yeah. Like, The Wiz felt like home. Pun. But it did, though, because it rehearsed here. We rehearsed it like a Broadway show. Mm. Kenny Leon was the director.
Yes.
You know, it just felt very much like, it felt familiar. Mm-hmm. Even when we went on to set, it's still like we added the cameras and we did all those things. But because it was kind of shot in a proscenium way, it still felt like we were doing theater.
Right.
So that felt very familiar. Hairspray blew my mind because it was in L.A. You know, I went out to L.A. to do that.
Right.
And we kind of rehearsed it like a Broadway show, but not really. And then we got on set and it was all these different locations. So it was just a very different world. So I was learning quickly how LA TV works. You know
right,
what I mean? Which
right.
was great. I love dipping my toe in like different ponds, like figuring out, you know, new things. So that was cool. And then with Jesus Christ Superstar, that was supposed to be a concert. And then as we rehearsed it, turned into what it was, which was beautiful.
Right.
But like, you know, it was still billed as Jesus Christ Superstar Live in concert.
Yeah.
And it was very much not a concert. It was a full, you know, the band was on stage.
Yeah. Right.
But we rehearsed that as well like a Broadway show. And then when we got on set, it was, you know, it was one location, but it was just a big scale, adding in the live audience and the cameras and all that stuff.
So what did you do during the actual live broadcast?
So with those live, with television, there are a lot of stage managers employed on that show. Like with a Broadway show, on a musical, the minimum you usually have is three.
Okay.
And sometimes you have maybe five,
okay.
You know, if depends on how big the show is.
Yeah.
On a play on Broadway, you have two stage managers.
Gotcha.
On The Wiz, I think we had maybe nine.
What?
That's not even that many. On Hairspray, I think we had probably 18. Jesus Christ Superstar was probably around 16, 18 as well.
No way.
Yeah, because there's so many moving pieces.
Right.
And the way it's structured is that everyone has like a specific job,
mm-hmm.
you know, because with television, it moves in a different way than theater. Like in theater, stage managers kind of oversee the entire production. In television, there is the lead stage manager who oversees the entire production and makes sure everything's moving along.
Yeah.
And then he kind of delegates tasks to each stage manager, or she, whoever is the lead, they delegate tasks so that everyone has like a specific job. So like you make sure that this part of the stage is set for this when we get here. You make sure that like when we call the flying sequences, they're doing X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z. So you're not, you're running around because you're covering a lot of ground, but like your job is very specific.
Yeah. I mean, I just think about watching a live musical like that. I'm always like, I know they like it's an adrenaline rush.
Yeah,
it's like you start and you
and there's
go.
So many people who are working hard to make it happen, and that's why, because everyone has like their thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And which is kind of nice, because if you get bogged down with something that's going wrong, someone else is covering the next part, so you're not having to run to leave this other thing in the lurch to get to that. So like it kind of covers the basis by having all those people.
Mm-hmm. So then, what about the Tony Awards?
Oh my God, dream come true.
Yes,
1,000%.
Only imagine.
Yeah, It was that was quite special. I had no idea. The call came out of nowhere. I didn't even like put myself out for it, really. Gary Hood, who was the lead stage manager for the live TV shows, I think I might have written to him like years ago, right after Hairspray, which was in 2015. Was
Is
it?
That right? I think it was 16.
You're right. Wiz was 15. Yep. Come on. Come on, you better know. 2016. So, yeah, I wrote him after that, and I'm like, I'm going back to New York. I know, because he also does the Kennedy Center Honors. I was like, if you need any help with any of this stuff out here on the East Coast, hit me up. I'm available. I will find time.
Yes.
And he was like, okay, cool. And, of course, you know, he has his people. No one leaves a job at the Tonys because it's such a – it's a great gig, and it's the same stage manager every year because they've been doing it for years and they love it.
Right.
For whatever reason, there was an opening this year, and I don't know who was the first call, and I don't care who the first call was. But I just know that my phone rang and I immediately said yes. Okay.
Yes,
and I didn't know what I was going to be doing. I didn't know how many days I was going to be there, but all I knew was that I was going to be a stage manager for the Tony Awards. And I said, sign me up.
I was like,
I will figure it out. I don't care what I'll be working on at the time. I will figure out the personal days. Like I will be there. And it was mad. It was hard, and it was a long couple of days, but it was so great. It was so great.
So yeah, how did the timing work out? Like, when did you start? A couple of days before? Is there like, pre-production stuff?
So everyone filters in. There's one stage manager who's there for I think like 2 weeks, like figuring things out, and then like as the days go on, you slowly start to add in more to like get used to the sets and the things. Once we start adding the cast and the performers, we start bringing in more stage managers to wrangle them, and then once the presenters come in, like even more people show up, and so like it's like you just tag on as the days go.
Yes. And then I would just like. Tell me you thought about High School Cody then on the night of the
that
Tony
was
Awards.
I mean, I honestly everything felt very surreal the night of the Tony Awards, especially because not only was I working on the Tony Awards, like I have friends winning Tonys. I have friends who were nominated for Tonys, and I was like, when you know what I mean? It was just those moments of like, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that was mind-blowing. And I think like I was just on cloud nine. People would run off, like when Rachel Chaffney ran off stage with Tony, I screamed at her. We screamed at each other, and they were looking at us like we were crazy. And then she walked away, and I was like, I can't cry. I'm at work. What is wrong with you? Oh, but it was just so beautiful, like just watching that happen. And then like seeing your friends perform on the Tonys right in front of you. Like I never dreamed that this would be my reality, you know?
Absolutely.
And here I am. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Man, I'm like inspired by you right now. Like, we got to all hustle. We got to be on the grind.
Absolutely.
Be resilient and be full of gumption. Yo, I could talk to you forever. I'm inspired.
I feel like we're best friends.
Oh my God, y'all, he said it, not me.
I love it.
I do too. And like, Texas kids got to stick together.
Absolutely.
The last two questions to wrap up the podcast are as follows. One, if you could recommend a piece of Black art, whether that is a musical or a music album, a film, a TV show, for our listeners to take in, what would it be?
Okay, so I used to be obsessed with this woman, and I used to watch her shows all the time because I find that she is... I don't know if you know what I'm going to say, though. I find that she is so smart and so blunt and so... she just cares so much. So it made me, like, want to dig deeper and, like, figure out, like, what's going on in my life.
Yeah.
I used to watch Iyanla Fix My Life.
That's not what I was expecting, but I love
it. No, I know. Listen, let me tell you, if you want to get yourself together and catch a blessing, you got to watch Iyanla.
Okay.
She drops, I mean, sometimes some of them are a little bit hard to watch because they deal with like very real things. Mm. But it's kind of crazy. Yeah. And the other thing I will say is that on TV One, there are these like docuseries. There's one that's called Unsung, and then there's one that's called Unscripted, I think. Oh, Uncensored. It's called Uncensored. And one of the best ones I just recently watched was about Niecy Nash. And she just sits up there and she kind of tells her life story in like, you know, an hour. Mm-hmm. And those are so inspiring, especially as young Black artists. You watch these people who you've been seeing in TV for a long time. Yeah. And you get to know their journey and like the things that they've done. And that inspires me a lot. Like hers is amazing. Lisa Ray's is amazing. Mm-hmm. Tisha Campbell had one. Tina Arnold had one recently. Yeah. And it's just like, listening to like, you know, how some of their journeys are very similar and like how they got to where they are by sometimes struggling and sometimes like doing things they didn't want to do and sometimes coming from a broken home and like and like a lot of these things resonates with a lot of us.
Right.
So like watching and hearing their stories is amazing.
I love that.
Yeah.
Y'all, that was great.
Uncensored TV One.
TV One, shout out. And then the second question, if you could give a shout out to a fellow Black artist, who would it be? And this, look, everyone's always like, just one. So it could be a top three. It could be people you know, people you don't know. Just to give some love.
All right. If I can give a shout out to a Black artist, I guess the top three, the first person that comes to mind is Miss Camille Brown.
Yes.
I'm obsessed with her. I don't even know how many shows I've done with her.
Aww.
But she's incredible. Yes. Her energy, her light. Just having her in a room is always so comforting.
Okay.
One of the first shows I did in New York City, I did a show at the Public. It's where I met her, called Fortress of Solitude. She was a choreographer, and I didn't know many people then, but I really didn't know her, and we just bonded. We clicked. There was something about her energy that I was obsessed with.
I love it.
So I would definitely shout her out any day.
Yes.
She's incredible.
Yes.
Someone else who I just recently met, as a young Black stage manager, her name is Janae Bonick.
Okay.
She was the assistant on Slave Play.
Okay.
And now she's working. She's the PA on Carolina Change.
Mm.
She was brought to me kind of through Rachel Chafkin because they've worked together before a lot downtown.
Mm.
And then she connected me. I'm doing Limpika with Rachel. So Janae is assisting me on that. And I want to shout her out because she is the definition of a resilient Black woman.
Ooh.
And I love her journey. And I'm so proud of like the strides that she's making. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible.
Good.
It's incredible. Yeah. So I'm very fortunate that she's been brought into my life. She's dope.
And into the industry, like doing
absolutely.
The damn thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Was there a third one you wanted to
do? Oh, a third one. I can think of one more. you know, the other person I want to shout out actually is Billy Porter. That's the third person.
All
it's
day,
Billy
every
Porter.
Day. Yes.
Because that man has been in this industry for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that man has been accomplishing things for a very long time.
That's true.
And now he is out here living his full truth at 50.
Yeah.
Or 51, however old he is now.
You're
but
right.
That is so inspiring to me. And he tells you that like you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Anything is achievable if you don't put a timeline to it. This man has literally been paving the way for people for years.
Mm-hmm.
He's had his ups, he's had his downs, and now look where he is now. It's really crazy. It's inspiring.
It's so true, though.
So he would be the third person I would shout out because he is doing it.
Yeah.
So I say that to say that you can achieve whatever you want. You just got to believe that you can.
And be like patient. Like
be patient like, and be open to the journey and be open to like things that come up. But never forget what you want. You know.
Yeah. Okay. So you're amazing. That has been established. We're all like the biggest fangirls of you now. We're starting a fan club. Am I right, listeners? Like we're obsessed with Cody. if folks want to follow you on social media, which y'all should, where can they do so?
I am on the socials at Cody Renard.
Perfect.
C-O-D-Y.
His Instagram is popping, y'all.
A-R-D.
Like, for real. Okay.
Oh, please.
No, it's so good. But I mean, seriously, like, I know you're probably like annoyed at me like gushing so much at this point, but I just think that what you're doing is so important. Like, to have you occupy these spaces is super important and is inspiring. And I'm like, I'm going to go make a list of like my goals right now because like, you know how to hustle and be on the grind and I need that in my life.
Well, thank you. I don't take that lightly. I've worked hard, and I'm glad that these things are happening for me. And I, the last thing I want to say, just because I find that we don't say it enough, I just think that whatever you want to do, you can do it. You know what I mean? And you don't know when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen, but just know that, like, anything is achievable.
Y'all, on that note, thank you so much, Cody, for being here today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Until next time, y'all.